Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, you know how I like to take you guys on the road with me. Sometimes we go all across the country. We've been in different cities and in different states. I stayed in Raleigh, North Carolina today, but kind of upgraded our surroundings. We're at the, it's really a historic home in downtown Raleigh. It's the offices of the Lieutenant Governor, who happens to be not only a buddy of mine, but a fellow follower of Jesus Christ, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Happy New Year, buddy. How are you?
Who are you, and how'd you get in my office?
pull the mic in a little closer to your mouth. Yeah. Who let this guy in the front door?
It's great to see you. Happy New Year to you too.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and we've got a lot of ground to cover today. We'll talk about some things. Everybody listening, I know many of you are not in North Carolina, but issues that affect North Carolina generally are issues that affect other states around the country. So some of these things will sound a little North Carolina-centric, although they really aren't when you look at the topics themselves. So we'll talk a little bit about sessions starting back again today, and the Lieutenant Governor here in North Carolina, much like the Vice President of the United States, has some roles, especially in the Senate here. We'll talk about that. Fourth Circuit Court, what a joke, what a mess. We'll talk about that. That's redistricting. Gerrymandering is a word that comes up. We're going to talk about that. Something that Dan was really involved in that's super important, not only here in North Carolina, but around the country, and this has been a big issue for the last at least 2 years. Campus Freedom of Expression Act, General Civility in Government, and broadband. Broadband's a big deal. We all live that way, and there's some things going on there that Donald Trump's been talking about. And speaking of Donald Trump, not one day, but now 2 days, with open media sourcing in his meetings, talking about immigration. Immigration is a big deal in North Carolina, as it is in other states around the country. So we're going to hit on all of those things today in our time with the Lieutenant Governor here in North Carolina, Dan. But the session's back today. You come out of a Christmas break. And what's that like over there for you as a Lieutenant Governor to deal with the state Senate here and everything that goes on at that level of politics? Tell us about your role in that. And what is that like generally today in America to kind of be in that political maelstrom that occurs right around the corner?
Well, actually, I think it's pretty fun, Steve. I enjoy it. I enjoy the process, and I enjoy the people, and it's it gets a bad rap from, I think, the media and from the public, because
sure,
they don't understand it, and it's not really demystified to them, and they believe what the media says about people. And excuse me, but I think generally speaking, obviously it's something that we need to be involved in. I would say that to all citizens at some point or another. They need to find a way to serve the people, you know, and that's why I do this. That's why all these people across the street do it. And so I enjoy the part of presiding over the Senate and getting involved in policy and trying to, you know, move the needle in the direction that I would like to see it move.
Well, you've been around politics for most of your life. Your mom served in Congress for, is it 18 years?
Yeah.
Sue Myrick there, so also was the mayor of Charlotte. So you've been around it a lot. And you're right. From the outside looking in, we assume it's always contentious, that everybody hates each other. And certainly we see that up on the federal level, up on the Hill. But what's it like on the state level? Is it as bad as a lot of us assume it is?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, everybody in that chamber, for the most part, are friends. People can have lunch together. They can hang out together. You have civil conversations all the time. They sit in committee meetings. They have to be civil in those committee meetings. And since we've been in charge, since the Republicans have been in charge, the Democrats get to speak in all these committees. They get to talk as long as they want and make sure that all their opinions are heard on the floor. As I preside as the president of the Senate, I let them speak as long as the rules allow them to speak. And we don't shut anybody off, and we don't call the question, which means we just vote on something without the Democrats in the back row being able to speak. The Democrats did that for 140 years against Republicans. They'd cut them off. They wouldn't allow any.
Well, most people aren't even aware of that. The Democrats controlled the North Carolina state legislature for 140 years. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, 140 years. And now last 7 years. And so all of a sudden the media blows things up as if there's all this contention over there. And there's really not. I would say that even all the Democrats that sit in the Senate chamber anyway would tell you that we're very fair.
Yeah.
We give them opportunities to speak on anything they want to speak on.
And then so is your role kind of a referee over there?
Yeah, in a sense it is. You know, I got to make sure the rules are being followed, and make sure that we're moving things along in the Senate and that sort of thing. So I enjoy that. It's an opportunity for me to get engaged in the debate. I don't get to debate, but to what's going on with the debate. So when I go out and about the state, then I have a better perspective of what's actually happening.
Well, one of the things that got national attention, of course, was HB2 and the bathroom bill and everything there. And everybody was
thought we could maybe make it through an hour without even mentioning
I know.
That.
Sorry about that. But the one thing, the reason I brought that up is because so many, especially liberals on the left, were saying this is the end of North Carolina. But I think things are going pretty well in this state the last time I checked.
Yeah, things are going pretty well, and they actually were all along while that entire debate was going on. It was pretty amazing to see our unemployment going down. Business was, we were creating about 6,000 jobs a month in this state while all that was happening. And so North Carolina was very competitive even at that point in time. And the state's doing extremely well. Fiscally probably is in good shape or better than just about any state in the country right now. We've moved from 44th. In the nation in business tax climate, that's near the bottom, to third now.
Wow,
third,
you're kidding me.
We're number three in the nation.
That is awesome.
Tax Foundation's business tax climate. So we're doing quite well.
Yeah, and we see a lot of people moving into North Carolina. It's an unbelievable place to live. So if you're listening and you're outside of the state and you're wondering where you should move to North Carolina. I think that's hands down. There's no doubt about that. The Fourth Circuit struck down the case on redistricting. Gerrymandering is a word that's around that, when we're trying to redraw districts to help one party or the other. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised by that, what the Fourth Circuit court did?
Are you ever surprised with anything the Fourth Circuit does?
I am not.
No, I don't think there's anything to be surprised about. I mean, listen, it's just pure politics out of the Fourth Circuit Court now. We're seeing this with this judicial overreach all across the country, really, in every circuit court now. All but one, I think, are controlled by really these leftist judges who really they're not following the law at all. What's going on with our redistricting here is not following the law. And when our guys are drawing the districts, just like it was done for 140 years, there's always politics that's involved in it. That's just kind of the way it's been done. That's why you win on the 10th year. When the census is done, that's why there's so much effort that's put into that, because they know that party gets to draw the districts and there's going to be some advantage to that. There's no perfect district out there. And the rules were set, and we followed the rules, and we followed the rules again, and they keep coming down with these orders. But they'll say, too much race involved, not enough race involved, too much politics involved. Yeah. So you and I have talked about this before. Actually sat in a little dinner party with a bunch of Democrat governors and lieutenant governors. I was the only Republican there, and they went off on this very issue, that this was going to be the issue that they were going to tackle, was redistricting in the states, and they were going to spend hundreds of millions doing that.
Wow. Yeah, and you're right. There's nothing that comes out of the courts that surprises us. President Trump doing some great things on getting some right-minded people into the court system. We'll talk about that. Campus freedom of expression, civility in government, broadband, immigration, a lot on the docket to talk about with the lieutenant governor. Dan Forrest, we're here live downtown Raleigh at his office. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, and I'm here in the Lieutenant Governor's office, North Carolina State. Lieutenant Governor, a good buddy of mine, Dan Forrest, and we're on the break, and Dan says, hey, can you turn my ear down? And I'm like, well, what's the problem? He's like, too much of you. then we start going, now you know what it feels like to be Mrs. Noble, well, at least in that respect. So we're here just covering a lot of different things, and we were talking about the Fourth Circuit, which doesn't usually surprise anybody, but judicial overreach in general has got to be a problem for a conservative state like North Carolina, with you as the lieutenant governor and presiding over the Senate and legislation. Is that specter always out there, that as we pass laws here, common sense, good conservative laws in North Carolina, that you're only one liberal court away from having that dumped? Is that something that you guys have to factor in as you try to move legislation forward?
Of course, always. Yeah, I mean, it happens with everything. What, we had a marriage amendment, right? We saw the fight on the marriage amendment. We saw the fight on our bathroom bill. We saw the fight on voter ID. We've seen this. This is coming from the courts. As the courts are coming in and striking down everything you do, you have three. It's really one, but three unelected, appointed lawyers that wear black robes, that are political appointees of whoever the president happens to be, Obama in this case, that are coming in and telling us our laws are invalid, they're unconstitutional, and they base it off of nothing, not right. The Constitution for sure.
Sure.
And so the overreach is ridiculous. So somebody's got to check them. The Supreme Court has to check them at one level, but I think Congress has to put check on them as well. I mean, what we see right now is we see this, they're just running free, right? They're running free across the country and making these decisions. They're telling the president he can't strike down an executive order from another president. It must stand because another president did it. I mean, can you imagine that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Nothing gets to change, right? You pass a law and the courts just say, no, you can't change that law. That was passed by the last Congress. Congress changes laws every year, right? So judges can't do that. They don't have the authority to do that. And that's completely unconstitutional.
Totally.
But there has to be some check and balance. And as you and I have talked about before, that's really Congress. I mean, the Supreme Court's the only one you find in the Constitution with their outlined duties as to what they're supposed to do. Yeah. But the Congress could wipe out all the federal district appeals courts if they wanted to.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
they could strike them all down and say, sorry, we don't have them anymore.
Well,
they have the authority to
do that. Congress should – I'm thinking Congress should impeach a sitting federal judge once every 15 or 20 years just to remind them that they can't.
Every 15, 20 minutes.
That's about the rate that we need to go. Are you encouraged by the judicial appointments that President Trump's trying to get through? Obviously, Neil Gorsuch was huge, and that will be a huge move for the next 20, 30 years. But on the federal level across the board, because this is an issue on a state level, it doesn't matter what state you're in. How do you feel about what the Trump administration's doing?
Well, you know, from what I know, everything looks good. Gorsuch was a big first pick. Being an originalist on the Supreme Court right now is absolutely huge. I think that saves the day in America for a little bit of time related to the Supreme Court. It will take 20 years to replace the federal district courts. They serve long terms, and most of them are just appointed over the last 8 years.
Yeah.
And so it's going to take, in some cases, the next 15, 20 years to replace those judges.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. Another issue that's been around and gotten a lot of attention, especially throughout the year, last year, college campuses, Ben Shapiro, Milo Yiannopoulos, you name it, Ann Coulter, conservative people going to liberal places like Berkeley and all hell breaking loose, quite frankly. Talk to us about the Campus Freedom Expression Act that was here in North Carolina, and I know you were championing that. What is it, and why did we need it?
Well, my office started this, 3 years ago, maybe longer, but we worked with Stanley Kurtz, who was instrumental in having a model legislation for the country, which worked with the Goldwater Institute, and they worked with Heritage Foundation and others, but we kind of worked with them and crafted this legislation for North Carolina, and we did a lot of bargaining behind the scenes with the university system and others to try to get the right bill, and we think we did. But the main premise of it is that freedom of expression, freedom of speech, is still alive and well on our college campuses. That's the place where it really should be. And the heckler's veto, the shouting down of a speaker, isn't in and of itself not free speech. And so we have to allow those speakers that are invited to campus to speak freely. We need to be able to strike down these things called free speech zones and, all the speech codes that end up showing up on campuses and all those types of things, because there's not a place for them on our campuses. And just because you're offended by the speech of somebody doesn't mean you can shut them down. That's the whole premise of free speech. So this bill really allows for that. The Board of Governors wrote some rules related to that. And most importantly, there's a group called FIRE that actually ranks all of our universities across the country for their effectiveness in free speech. And they have a green light, yellow light, red light rating. And we started this process. We only had one green light university in North Carolina.
Jeez.
There's only 30. There's only 30 some in the
That's
country.
That's crazy.
There's only 30 some right now. We only had one. And now we have 8. So by far the most
That's
in the whole
amazing.
Country. Virginia is second with 4. Kudos to the universities who stepped up and said, we want to be a free speech campus.
Yeah.
And so we have 8 of them right now, and that's good. We need all of them need to be right. So we're not saying that's victory.
Right,
that
right,
we're,
right.
We're, we are light years ahead of other states and actually doing something about this.
And the importance of that, it's an obvious issue for us, for you and I, you as an elected official, me as a guy on the radio. But the young people, I think a lot of people on college campuses, these students, are so poorly educated just on civics and on the Constitution and understanding these rights at all. Why is this such an important issue for the next generation? What are we trying to teach them by leading them down this road as you did with the Campus Freedom of Expression Act?
Well, obviously our nation is where it is today because of the Constitution, those amendments to the Constitution that keep us free and, keep dictators from moving in and taking over and shutting down anything you have to say. And, I think where it's really important today, though, Steve, and you see this, you know, daily on your radio show, is that people are offended by everything today.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that you're. It's not even about debate anymore. I used to say, oh, well, we need freedom of debate on our campus. No, people are offended if you talk to them.
Yeah.
Right? You have to just talk to them, and they get offended.
Right.
And so we have to get past this with our young people in America, that they need to learn to sit down across a table like this and have a conversation, sometimes have an argument about things, and be able to walk away and be friends and disagree and walk away. It's kind of that political civility thing. We've seen incivility across the spectrum, not just politics. It's in every part of life.
Everything.
Right? Yeah. So if you move into a new neighborhood and your neighbor is of a different political party from you, you're not even going to talk to them. I mean, how crazy is that?
Oh,
you know, you and I grew up in neighborhoods where we probably I didn't know the political persuasion
of my
neighbors. You know, we just went out and played with kids and we played ball and we hung out with our neighbors and nobody talked politics, really. It just didn't happen, you know, and I think we need to get back to that in America. There's a lot more important things in this country than just politics.
Yeah.
Politics is an important aspect, but it's not the end all be all of everything. And we've lifted it too high. We've over politicized absolutely everything. And I believe that when a society politicizes any issue, social issue or not, at that point, you've created a divisiveness in your country. And so everything's over politicized. So then everything's overly divisive.
And
so you have these multiple spectrums out there that are not getting along and not talking.
Well, it's the divided states of America, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly where we're at. It's you know, your mom, who served 18 years in Congress, I asked her this question when I had her on the show shortly after she retired. And I said, give me an example of how things have changed from the moment you got into Congress to as bad as it is today. And this was a few years ago. And she said, and this was a great example. She said, well, when I first got into Congress and went up to D.C., we used to have a Bible study. And we'd invite women from both parties, and we'd have women from both parties show up. By the time in her 18th and final year in Congress, not a single Democrat woman would come to the woman's Bible study. And it was because politics had divided them. Even though they might unite on the word of God and on the gospel, they divided because of politics. And that's a massive problem in this country. We lose civility. We start to lose the country, I think. I don't think we're overstating it. Do you?
No.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest live from his offices down in downtown Raleigh, North Carolina. When we come back, we'll talk about immigration that's on the hot seat. We'll be right back. 'Cause you are more than I could ever dream. This world could ever see. Forever I'm discovering. Jesus, you are more. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble on the Where's Waldo show. Well, actually, it's called Action Radio. I didn't tell you this. I'm changing the name of the show in about the next 60 or 90 days.
Actually, if you had one of those little red and white toboggan
caps, I could
caps,
pull it off.
You could be Waldo.
I could totally pull it. I am Waldo.
You are Waldo.
You're the first one right here on live radio, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, the first
Waldo
one to figure out. You actually found Waldo. Well, I travel so much. I don't think I travel as much as you, but I traveled a lot last year. And I can, you know, all this cool little gear, I can take the show on the road. And I'm like, where am I doing the show from today? It's all over the place. But today, particularly special at the Lieutenant Governor's office here in North Carolina, Dan Forrest, who's an incredible Lieutenant Governor. It's just been such a great blessing for our state, but is also a good friend of mine and a brother in Christ. So it's three strikes and you're in forever. That's pretty cool. And we're going to talk about immigration. We're going to talk about broadband. That's a big deal. The internet in general. I did want to do one thing right quick. All right. So the other day, and I actually did the show on this on Monday, Oprah Winfrey for president, Oprah Winfrey 2020. And as soon as I heard that, I thought to myself, a better subject would be Dan Forrest 2020. Now, not on the presidential level, at least not yet, but perhaps in the state. So what do you think about that? I mean, I gooned you a little bit at Call to Worship a couple months ago, and thanks for coming out and doing that. That was a great night. But how do you handle that? There's, you know, a lot of people are talking about that. Lots of people on Facebook Live want you to run for governor in a couple of years. But where are you at on that right now?
Well, I mean, you know, I haven't been shy about it. You know, we've said, yeah, that's something we'd like to do. We're laying the foundation for it now. You kind of do all the things you need to do.
Yeah.
No announcement forthcoming, you know, but you do all the things that you need to do to for the potential of that happening.
Now, you know, I met you. We met at a luncheon years ago. This was right after you had kind of stepped away from being in the business world as an architect, and you were becoming an activist, and I was already there, and we met that day. And, you know, just a couple of business guys trying to make a difference in our community and in our state. How do you, as a Christian, as a just an American citizen, how do you kind of manage, internalize, deal with, process the position that you're in now, in the position that you may run for in the future? I mean, how do you kind of shoulder all that, Dan?
I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, to be honest. I try to walk humbly in what I do. I know I'm not important. You gain a lot of friends the day you get elected. Those people, same people really weren't your friends the day before
right.
you got elected.
Yeah.
So you got to keep it all in perspective. Don't think of yourself too highly, and make sure that you think of yourself in the proper perspective. And
yeah.
this is just one role. You're playing a role in the kingdom. I play a role in the kingdom. My staff plays a role here. My role is not any more important than theirs. It's just the place where the Lord has me right now. And he placed me here, and he'll have me here as long as he wants me. Then he'll take me out. When he takes me out, I'll go
right.
do something else.
Right?
So there's no guarantee of tomorrow. And that's why I tell people, we got, every day. You live every
that's
day,
right.
and you serve the people of North Carolina every day, and you try to do that faithfully. I don't have any enemies, Steve. I think that's one of the important things. A lot of people in politics, spend years building their enemy
sure.
list,
yeah.
and I just
yeah.
don't have any. And so there are people that probably would say that I'm their enemy, but I just don't have any.
You don't think like that.
I don't think ill of anybody. Anybody could be my friend. And I think that,
You as a fellow believer, and this will freak somebody out. You wouldn't say this on every show, but we really only have one. We have an enemy. He's got a name,
yeah.
And he's got legions behind him. But other than that, yeah, I mean, and that was a big change in me from being an activist and being involved in the culture war. Is I looked at, and I'll be very frank right now, I looked at the left, and I'm like, to hell with them. Mm-hmm. Jesus looks out at the same group. He looks out at the masses, and he weeps because he sees they're like sheep without yeah. a shepherd. But I saw enemies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't anymore. I see lost people. And I see saved people. And then everything kind of flows out of that.
Yeah. I'm a sinner, saved by grace,
yeah.
just like you. I am the wretch that is talked about in that song, Amazing Grace,
yeah.
And God showed me amazing grace. And I hope I show other people amazing grace every day because that's what the Lord requires of
yeah.
us to do. And my enemies are not of flesh and blood, like you said. They're of another realm.
That's
and
right.
so. So that's how I try to go about my day, that I don't want to look at anybody as, I don't like that person or I hate that person. I want to look at them as I love them, and I want them to, be my friend and
yeah.
if they desire to do so. And if not, well, we can still work together.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What a great point. Well, the last 2 days, immigration's been a big deal. Donald Trump had the open meeting yesterday. He did it again today. Immigration has been a big issue here in North Carolina. So talk kind of from a national perspective to a North Carolina perspective on this topic of immigration and the wall and the problem that we've had there. And amnesty and all of that, just for mm-hmm. a few minutes. Where do you come down on all of that?
Well, same place I've always come down. I've never nuanced this message. You have to secure your border. We're the only major country in the world that doesn't secure their border. We have two borders that need to be secured, actually, but the southern border, first priority. And until you get your borders really secured, you really can't have any of those other conversations. I think it was Clay Aiken that said, this whole immigration issue. you never heard me quote Clay Aiken before.
No, that's the first time ever you figured out on Waldo, we might as well throw Clay Aiken.
It's like
in there.
Turning the faucet on and the bathtub, and it gets full, and you're trying to spoon it out, with a spoon.
Yeah.
And you really can't do that. You've got to deal with the border security first, primarily for national security reasons, so you got to do that first. Once you do that, then I believe you can solve all the problems. When
yeah.
you need workers, when you need guest workers to come in for any period of time, I think we should have a very liberal guest worker program.
Sure.
We should just open it up, open the floodgates to guest workers to be able to come. And then we very clearly lay out what it takes to be a citizen of our country again in a new way that everybody understands. We've always had those laws.
Yeah.
We've always had, we've always invited millions of people into our country every year. We're very open. We always have been. But I think those laws need to be reiterated in a very clear and concise way. And I think Donald Trump was right, believe it or not. When he first said it, I thought that's a little weird, but, the wall with the big, beautiful door in it or whatever. I know what he means
right.
by it.
Yeah.
He means
yeah.
come and go. If we build it, you can come and
right.
go
right.
much more freely. And now it's not. I pass these just like you do every day. There's huge numbers of immigrants that come here and work in our state. They're beautiful people. They're the sweetest people you ever meet.
Yeah.
They're extremely hard workers. Could you imagine being them and being here illegally in every day of your life, wondering if you're going
right.
to be shipped out? Why would we do that in America?
Well, I was in the contracting world for years, and
yeah.
most of the ones that I had conversations with and that other people knew didn't like living in the darkness. They
yeah.
they wanted to come out
sure.
in the light. And when talking with some of the people that they work for and some of the big subcontractors and stuff, I'm like, well, you know, what do you think about you have to sign something that acknowledges that you broke the law. You have to pay a fine, and all that has to happen before you have any kind of path to citizenship. Yeah. And what kind of fine would they pay? And this particular person who was, had come to America when they were 12 and got legal and everything, but worked with a lot of people that, that were not legal. I said, would they pay $5,000? And this person said, at least that. Yeah. I'm like, would they pay $10,000? She goes, I think they would.
Sure.
And so talk about the wall. Do you agree with Donald Trump on the wall? Yeah. And then this whole notion of amnesty. What do you think about that?
I agree with the wall. I'm not a giant fan of amnesty. I think it can take a lot of different approaches when the wall is built. Once that is done, I think you can start to have conversations. You can't have conversations prior. You know, if the floodgates are going to be opened up and you're going to say, oh, we're providing amnesty for group X, well, guess what? X, Y, Z, A, B, C are right. all going to show up the next day claiming, right, whatever
right.
they want to claim.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't do that to the citizens of this country who pay taxes, who are engaged in this country, who are law-abiding citizens, regardless of what you think of and how nice these folks are and how hard they work. If they're here illegally, they're still here illegally. They've right. still broken the law. And you have to deal with that issue. You can't deal with that issue again until you build the wall.
Is there
you have
much,
to do that.
Is there much that can be done on a state-by-state level here in North Carolina? Obviously, it's a different topic when you're down in Texas or Arkansas or not Phoenix, sorry.
Yeah, Arizona.
But in North Carolina, I mean, is it being talked about much in the halls of government in North Carolina? And what can we do as a state when the federal government isn't doing its job?
Well, I think it's tough. I mean, obviously, you really can't do a ton as a state. I mean, you can say that you're going to be an e-verify state. You know, you can pass laws and say that you have to vet these workers that are coming. And the people that are on e-verify do the best job they can to make sure that these people are legal, that they're hiring, and that sort of thing. The bigger issues become agriculture. Agriculture industry is massive with their immigration needs, and they're all seasonal, and they all come different times. And it costs farmers a ton to house immigrants and to pay for their visas and all that type of stuff. It's a massively cumbersome project or process. And I think, you know, the farmers do the best they can.
Yeah.
They got to get their crops out of the ground. Right. And so that has to be dealt with. And again, the wall is the way to deal with that. You build it and then you open it up for whatever need you have. You say, here are the needs we have. You don't just open it up and say, whoever wants to illegally cross this border, come on over. We welcome you because you know what you get. You get people you need and people you don't need and don't want. You know, you get the criminal element as well,
sure.
which is alive and well in MS-13 and other gang related stuff. So you get the good with the bad and or the bad with the good. And so I've always said, build the wall and then we can have the other discussions.
Then we can talk.
If all these other discussions are happening first, then the wall will never get built.
Yeah. That's the only leverage point he really has.
And
we'll
Reagan,
see what he
Reagan
does with
tried
it.
That, right? Reagan was promised the wall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he got the other stuff.
Yeah. Right. You know? Yeah. And we'll see if Donald Trump does it. You know, Mr. Art of the Deal.
That's right.
I think for him, it's such a big deal to get something done so he can say, hey, we got it done. I hope that he stands his ground. I don't know if he will. Do you think he'll stand his ground on the wall?
I have no idea.
Yeah,
we'll I have see. No idea. I mean, he was pretty strong on it on the campaign.
Yeah.
So my gut would tell me yes. So far, he has done the vast majority of things that he said he was going to do.
All right, scale from 1 to 10. Donald Trump's first year as president.
I'd give him a 7.
A 7. I'm right there with you. I thought he was going to be kind of a 60-40 guy, a 65-35 guy.
Yeah.
I think he's on track with that. But that, I think that's wise. You have no idea what Donald Trump's going to do. I think the left agrees with that statement as well. I'm here with Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio. We'll be right back after this. Back at Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you. A privileged day, a blessed day as we're spending some time with the great Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, who's also a friend of mine, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. We're actually down at his office building, which is a historic home. This is beautiful. It's a pretty cool place to come to work every day.
This is the best office in North Carolina. Just don't tell anybody.
Yeah, just don't tell
don't
anybody.
Tell anybody yeah.
When you first got elected, and because you're in your second term, I thought it was great to hear, and I wasn't surprised by this at all, that because you guys had to come in here and kind of fix it up and spruce it up. How did you accomplish that? I love the way that you came at this because it was responsible. I think it set a great tone for the way you were going to govern as a lieutenant governor. But that was a cool story how you guys kind of
we came in here. Actually, when we got the keys to the place, we walked in and we're like, oh my goodness, what did we just walk into? This place is a dump and we can't work here. I mean, it was just nasty and red carpet and the paint was coming off the walls and peeling off the ceilings, and there were fluorescent light fixtures from the 60s hanging up from the ceilings. There were, you know, old printers, probably about 50 old printers just thrown in closets. And then the place was just a wreck. Yeah. You know, people had desks. They were turned over file cabinets they were using as tables and credenzas. It was a mess. You know, it was just nasty. So basically I called on my friends from architecture and I said, listen, can you guys help? You know, we need somebody to provide carpet. We need somebody to do plaster work and paint. We need furniture and light fixtures and you name it. And, so we called out our friends and they came in and swooped in and, kind of saved the day and fixed this place up for the people. It's not for me. It's for the people, you know, this will be for posterity, hopefully, and be passed on for a long time. But everything you see in this office has either been, is either on loan or has been donated to the state of North Carolina. So it's pretty cool to think that you know, and we also got it put into statute last session that this will be the office of the lieutenant governor because it wasn't set in statute. So
really?
So that will be in the future.
How old is this? This is a historic home. How old is it?
1882.
Yeah.
So it precedes the governor's mansion.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's such a cool setup. What a blessing to be able to come here. We were talking about this a little bit off the air during the commercial break on Facebook Live, but I think it's an important topic. I've actually got a guy named Clay Sturgill, who will be on the show next Tuesday, former Raleigh police officer, got injured on the job, three surgeries, and then got absolutely hooked on opioids. And we had one of our friends on Facebook Live asked about the drug epidemic, and you mentioned this is a big deal in North Carolina. I want to talk about that. It's a good way to kind of segue towards the show next Tuesday. But the opioid, is that the main problem drug-wise in North Carolina and in a lot of other states? We're not unique.
Well, it's become opioids, heroin. You know, I mean, most of these things end up being like over-the-counter drugs where people start with, you know, and they're going and raiding their friends' medicine cabinets and stuff like that, you know, and they become people, you know, just like you and I, that get addicted and they, you know, all of a sudden they're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they turn to heroin because it's so cheap and readily available out there. And so heroin's a massive problem right now. So I think everybody in the country's dealing with this. It like jumped up really quick. I mean, it's kind of the, you know, middle age average person kind of problem in this country right now. It's your next door neighbor, right? And so there's a lot of people working on it. You know, the governor's supposedly working on it. The attorney general's supposed to be working on it as well. The general assembly is working on it. We've been meeting with companies. You know, there's a company called Scriptera out there that's developed an app that your doctors and your pharmacists and your state governments can all get on and in real time, they can log on any person that comes into their office and any drug that's being prescribed to them.
Wow.
So what happens now is there's this delay period. So somebody goes to a doctor and they get a prescription, then they go to a pharmacist and get it filled. Well, there's a delay for when the doctor has to say that person came in, and then there's a delay for when the pharmacist actually has to tell that person came in and got the drug. So you'll have people that know how to work the system, and they can, you know, they can get 10 doctor's appointments in a day, and then they can go get 10 prescriptions and go get those prescriptions filled. And before you know it, they've got millions of dollars worth of drugs before anybody knows that they've been doing anything. What we believe is there should be a system in place that's instantaneous. As soon as that person walks into the doctor's office, the doctor can pull it up and say, well, I see you just visited another doctor today for the same prescription.
Yeah.
And they just walk out. They wouldn't even stay, right? So the doctor really doesn't have to do anything. And same thing, you walk into a pharmacist and the pharmacist can see, oh, I see you just got this prescription, right? And they'll even count. They have pill counters the person that gets the drug actually has to put their pills out on a table and take a picture of it. And the software will actually make sure that those are their pills and they get to count them.
Wow.
Then doctors can say, you know, let me see your pills. How many do you have left? That kind of thing, to know that they're taking them in the right fashion and that sort of thing. So there's technology that will help with the problem. Won't solve the problem,
right,
but it will help with the problem. So those are kind of things we can swoop in and do now. And then there's a much bigger cultural problem.
Oh,
my
goodness. Yeah, it's huge. And the thing, Clay Sturgill, the former Raleigh cop who's been on leave ever since, disability basically, and he's trying to get off of that because one of the problems is he wants to get back to work. And this is a head of household. He's still married, has two kids.
Yeah.
And because God made us to work and be productive,
yep,
that was part of his problem that drove the depression more. And it's amazing how dangerous these opioids are that doctors are handing out and pain management people. It's just heartbreaking because he's like the guy you'd meet next door who wasn't looking for this. He wasn't out there trying to figure out how am I going to get addicted to drugs. I mean, chemically, it's just brutal.
Yeah, and it's multifaceted. You know, what you don't want to do is take the opioids off the market. People that really do need pain control need them, right?
Yeah.
But you need to control that. So you don't want to say, oh, for these people that really do need to control their pain that they can't get anything.
Right.
And that's the challenge you face.
The we were talking about the president earlier and bounced off of that talk about immigration. Another thing Donald Trump's been talking about is broadband.
Yeah.
And of course, that's an issue here in North Carolina. There's a lot going on in North Carolina that we're doing as a state. And this is an issue that's not North Carolina specific. Again, these are things that we're talking about today that even though we're talking to the lieutenant governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest, these are things and topics and issues that apply all around the country. So let's talk about that one, because this is going to continue to get more complicated, broadband in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those issues that every state is facing right now. You know, North Carolina is the second most rural state in the country. So there's a lot of citizens out there that live in places that don't get high-speed broadband right now. And we know that it's not, I wouldn't call it a utility because it's really not, but it's getting close to that, right? That it's if you want to be connected to the world of jobs out there, you know, it certainly helps to have broadband for if you want to try to solve some of these problems that are facing rural everywhere in America, rural America, towns, small town America, broadband's one way to that, you know, you can live and work anywhere. Right. So we know we need to start to solve that problem. As I've told you before, you know, we'll be the first state in the nation to have every classroom connected to high speed broadband. That was a claim that, I made out of this office a few years ago.
Yeah, amazing.
And we've moved forward. This year, we'll actually accomplish that goal. A lot of hard work from a lot of people, but we've been working with the FCC in Washington, D.C., and the General Assembly. The General Assembly's put up $32 million for connectivity, and the FCC put in $65 million. We've had nearly $100 million a year going into this, and so I'll be going to D.C. in the next week or two, maybe next week. I think it's next week, meeting with the FCC, the chairman, new chairman Pai, is a Republican, and the committee commissioners, as well as hopefully Secretary of Agriculture and others related to North Carolina, and how we believe we have a solution for their problem. Right now, we think that the federal government, that President Trump's saying, yeah, we need to do this, but we don't think they necessarily have a plan. So we want to help them put together a plan, and we believe North Carolina is further along than any other state in this. And so we can actually get it accomplished.
Yeah, that's awesome. And there's been great progress there. And you're right, whether it's the job market or even education, advanced education now, and even high school education. You know, we're homeschoolers. You guys have been homeschoolers at the Forrest household. And access to education, not just the job world, is incredibly important and becoming normal.
Yeah.
So broadband's a reality that has to be there.
It is, and I'm not a I'm not a fan of what you, maybe your listeners will know the term municipal broadband, where the government is actually the broadband provider.
Jeez.
That's been a disaster
God
in every town that has done it. So we want to make sure that people aren't thinking, oh, the government's going to come in and solve the broadband problem. The government has part of the issue to take care of, and there's some federal dollars related to this very issue that we'll be dealing with. But we have a backbone infrastructure in our state already that private providers can tap into and provide the service and make it competitive to provide the service to those people. And you want to have a competitive market. If the municipality comes in and says, we're going to be the provider, then there's no competition.
No.
Quality goes down and cost goes up.
That's exactly right. Boy, we've seen that on every level of government across the country.
That's right.
We're talking to my friend Dan Forrest, the lieutenant governor of the great state of North Carolina. We just have about a minute and a half or 2 minutes left. I wanted to ask you, kind of turn the corner back into our faith realm. The role of prayer in your life and your challenge to the rest of us, Dan, to pray for our elected officials, not the least of which would be yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm at the top of the list. Make sure you pray for me first. Start your day. No, I think I tell people every day, I said, that's the most important thing you can do. People say, I'm praying for you. So that's the most important job. So keep that up. I start my day every day with prayer. I get up early in the morning and I have my quiet time and my prayer time. I wouldn't want to start my day without it. It doesn't go as well when I do. I want to make sure that I am truly seeking the Lord throughout the day in prayer. I mean, I pray without ceasing all day before every conversation, before every radio show, before every interview.
Doesn't have to be formal. It's just off and on all day.
So that's kind of how I treat my life. And, hopefully, the Lord will honor that commitment and it'll show in the fruits, of the things that we do.
How much do our elected officials need our prayers? I mean, this is something I've been in rooms with 50, 60, 70 Southern Baptist pastors, and on the presidential level when Obama was the president, I could only get three or four hands to come up. People that – these are men leading congregations that would pray regularly for the president. Just challenge us, Dan, to pray for our elected officials, obviously you and everybody else, because I think we need to be challenged on it.
Well, I mean, I think that the Lord established these three institutions. He established the family, established the church, and established the government. So we need to pray for families in America. We need to pray for the church in America. We need to pray for government, which really is people leading our government.
Yeah, because when you look at the size of the problems, and I've taught two of your kids through civics and about the Constitution, once these young people understand the enormity of the problems and the challenge of them, they start to understand why God commanded us to pray for those in authority over us, because you guys certainly need it. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, the great state of North Carolina, thanks for letting me come down here and set up shop in the office. It's been great having you, and let's make sure this isn't the last time we do this.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thanks
for having me. We'll be back on tomorrow, friends. This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio. If you're watching right now on Facebook Live, speaking of prayer, we're going to finish up on the radio show here. But if you want to join us on Facebook Live, we're going to pray for the Lieutenant Governor for a minute or two here after the show is over. Just go to facebook.com/C2A Radio. This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio. God willing, I'll talk to you guys again real soon.